We're getting towards the final stretch of the Bundesliga season in Austria, and the Salzburg Free Cup final is now all set up for us as well. So we've got our talking points prepared for another episode of the Other Bundesliga podcast. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Other Bundesliga podcast. We are back again from our home ground, if you like, the Long Hall Pub and Kitchen in Vienna. And it is simply a beautiful day for a few pints in the pub garden. We've moved inside now to record. We've got three rounds of Bundesliga action plus two cup semi-finals to talk about before we order some beautiful Long Hall food and refresh our beers. It's me, Tom Midler, with Lee Wingate on the pod today. Lee. We had two cup semi-finals this week, one bona fide classic cup tie for the ages, and a routine one-sided win. No prizes for guessing which one we were at.
Yeah, we did pick the wrong one, didn't we? Went to Leoben for their game against Rapid. The stadium was described in one newspaper report as a Hexenkessel. I'm not sure it can be a Hexenkessel, a lion's den or a witch's cauldron with only 6,000 fans, but it was a good atmosphere, just a game that didn't really live up to it, I think.
Yeah, I think they had well more than 6,000 packed in on the day, wasn't it? Over 8,000, close to 9,000, I think, on the cup tie. As we'll talk about later, it was every inch of that stadium was full, wasn't it? It was very busy, one of the busiest games that we've been to. But before we talk about that one, let's instead focus on the biggest battle in Austrian football this season, Sturm Graz against Red Bull Salzburg. It's come to that stage of the season where everything is on the line, and this week in particular, or the last week if you're listening to this pod now, two matchups between Sturm and Salzburg, one in the Bundesliga, one in the ÖFB Cup semi-final. Just massive, massive for the course of the season, massive for the way that the trophies will be handed out this year. And let's start with the meeting last weekend in the Bundesliga, Sturm Graz against Red Bull Salzburg in Graz.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that I thought was characterised by pretty solid defending, which is quite funny when we come to talk about what happened in the cup tie, the one after that. Salzburg just edged it. Maybe they got slightly lucky with the goal. That was Mads Bistrup. The ball sort of fell out of the air to him, and he hit it on the volley, which was really nice, but it took a slight deflection off Jan Goran Stankovic. So perhaps it was a little lucky, but Salzburg, as they so often do, come out on top.
Yeah, there was only 2 points between the two teams going into that game, so it was a real battle at the top of the table, a massive one if Sturm want to be proper title contenders this season. Bidstrup's goal was the only goal. It came just after the break. There were lots of breaks in the first half for Fernando. Salzburg probably had the better of it. Sturm defended well, I thought. And Bidstrup scored, yeah, just 3 minutes after the restart. The talking points there, for a lot of people, involved the throw-in. Was it a foul throw or not? Did you see that, Lee?
No, I didn't, actually. No, I thought we were just going to go straight into who won the fight.
Yeah, it resembled more of a hockey game coming towards the conclusion of this one. But no, the throw-in, to be fair, controversy can be put to one side because ultimately it was a very close call, but it probably wasn't a foul throw-in. I don't think it was quite a foul throw-in. But if you see it, he throws it into the box and ultimately the ball then just falls to Bidstrup, who finishes really nicely, low volley into the bottom corner, as you said, and then he ran the whole length of the field to celebrate with the away team, with the away fans, sorry. And I thought that was really funny. It was really nice because basically the other Salzburg players don't do it for quite a long time afterwards. So eventually they sort of meet in the middle. But there were some great photographs because Bidstrup scores and he never scores. I think he scored the weekend before and then in the game against Sturm. But before that, he'd gone a long, long, long time in his career without a goal. And so he looked like a player who doesn't really score much and doesn't know what to do. And he was very excited and literally just sprinted the whole length of the field, stood there arms aloft in front of the away fans in Graz. So, yeah, really nice images. And then eventually his teammates caught up with him. But it was Danilius who took the throw-in. And he launched it into the box. And immediately in the action, his trailing leg comes straight up and around the back. So it's like exactly what you're told not to do. But the crucial thing is, luckily for him, the ball was just out of his hands by the time his toes come off the ground. So it was more, I think, more by luck than judgment, to be honest, unless that's just his technique and he does it in every throw-in. But I don't think he does. I think he got lucky. it got a lot of people on Twitter writing and sort of sharing clips of it, saying like, this is bad refereeing. Salzburg got lucky again. They did get lucky in that sense, but it wasn't incorrect. It was just a bit of good fortune. And ultimately, they edged the game 1-0. And I think that was probably deserved as well. Very, very close. But it's a shame that the game, well, or not a shame, depends on how you look at these things, but the game descended into chaos in the last 10 minutes, didn't it?
Yeah, total chaos. I think, obviously, they are scenes that you both don't want to see, but also want to see. It showed the sort of the passion and the, I think it sort of said a bit about the rivalry at the moment, because this is a rival that Salzburg, for the first time in quite some time, are really having to take seriously. We did have a few seasons where last were close, but genuinely, I think over the last 5 to 10 years, this current Sturm Graz team is the biggest threat that they've faced. And it did spill over at the end of the game. There was a sort of scrap between Luka Gonaduas and Stankovic, with both of them basically sort of fighting on the floor. They were both sent off for that. Although, weirdly, there was a straight red for Stankovic and a second yellow for Gonaduas, as far as I understood it. I was quite surprised that he wasn't also just straight red carded as well.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And it does make a difference, because it makes the ban length, or the potential ban length, different if you've got a second yellow rather than a straight red. But yeah, I think Stankovic felt very hard done by being shown a straight red in that sort of melee. Lavallee ended up getting sent off as well. And Stankovic and Lavallee have been very much key components of this Sturm Graz side this season. And then probably the longest talking point afterwards was whether Umar Soleil would also receive a red card. He didn't receive a red at the time. Once this brawl broke out and it became sort of a hockey match, Stankovic was like down on the ground brawling. Soleil comes in, gets Stankovic essentially in a headlock from behind, puts his right arm around the neck of Stankovic, and then like yanks him out of the huddle, yanks him out of the
Yankovic.
Fight. Yankovic, yeah, exactly. Weird Al Yankovic. Soleil just grabs him by the neck and pulls him out of the mall, I guess you'd call it, and was not given a red card. What were your thoughts on that?
I mean, it all seemed a little bit arbitrary what went on there. I think the thing is, when you have a brawl that's that big involving so many players, it's surely impossible, especially when they're all packed close together, surely impossible to assess what every single individual does and then punish them accordingly. So perhaps he got away with one there. And I think this was sort of Sturm's beef after the game. They sort of put a lot of it on the refereeing and the officiating. In fact, it was quite funny that Roman Mielis, everyone's favourite TV pundit, said after that game that it actually reminded him a little bit of Mourinho to deflect from the performance and what happened on the pitch to blame the referee. And Sturm did kind of, I think, take that approach a little bit, but maybe partially justified.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because they were close in the game, Sturm, but I don't think they can really say that refereeing decisions were the thing that swayed the game in Salzburg's favour. Maybe there's a gripe with the Soleil non-red card, but ultimately, they hardly produced anything. I don't think they had a shot on target in the game. Salzburg only had two. So Sturm did restrict them to a lot. But Sturm didn't really create much themselves. And I think, in a way, for such a big game and a team with such ambitions like Sturm Graz are, they'll know that they fell a bit flat in that game. It didn't go the way they wanted it to. They weren't able to really take control of the match. Ultimately, my hyperbole monitor went off after the match, because obviously on social media there's all this stuff, and they were putting out all these statements, Sturm, being like, oh, we got the Jeopardy music playing here, which is, it's just brilliant in the long haul. So I feel like I'm answering a question. But the hyperbole monitor went off because online, Sturm were like putting out all these quotes, these sound bites, which were like, Stankovic was fighting for his life in there, which I just thought, that's a little bit übertrieben, shall we say, a little bit exaggerated. He wasn't fighting for his life. It probably should have been a red for Soleil. And they said, you know, we very much expect that Soleil will be banned, will be retrospectively handed a red card. That is what we're expecting. That is what, you know, we'll proceed according to that happening. And then, of course, it didn't happen. But this was a bit of a talking point on its own, because it was another one of those weird VAR grey areas. Whereas when you see the replay of it, it's pretty clear. As you say, hard to identify exactly what's gone on. This was pretty easy. VAR said, we didn't get the images. I think they called them Müllbilder, which I quite like rubbish pictures. I guess there's probably a slightly different translation for that in terms of how severe that is in German. But yeah, basically they didn't have the right pictures to see, yet we did on TV quite clearly. We can see what Soleil has done with this sort of headlock.
That's the weird contrast, isn't it, when you get them on TV and then you see people that don't have them in the stadium.
We shouldn't have better images than VAR do. No chance. You know, that doesn't make any sense, does it, at all, when these are the people who have to officiate the game. It's a difficult enough job. How are we getting better? You know, we pay like 20 quid a month and we've got a better view than VAR have. How does that work? But then he didn't get banned retrospectively because they said it fell within the referee's jurisdiction. So, like, it happened during the game. It wasn't, like, outside of... There was one with Donis Avdiyi for Hartberg where he, like, grabbed his balls on the way off the pitch, and they were able to give him an extra ban because it's, like, the referee had already sent him off. Therefore, there's nothing the referee can do on top of that, given his conduct after a red card. What else can the referee do? So Bundesliga could step in and then give him an extra ban. But with Solé, it's like, no, the referee didn't see it and VAR didn't see it, but therefore we're not allowed to look at it. And again, it's those stupid things where it's like we're not allowed, we see it, but they're not allowed to look at it. That always just leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, no, in total agreement. It's a strange one, but I suppose at least it didn't end up costing them that much because they managed to bounce back in the cup game. So, you know, I think a lot of these things, in retrospect, they're assessed by the outcome they have. And at least Sturm Graz will be happy about how it ended.
They will. For a while, though, it did look as though the outcome was only going to get more controversial because Salzburg then have gone 5 points clear in the Bundesliga. They're looking in a great position. I was just starting to feel, even before that game, that everything was just slowly trending Salzburg's direction, just pulling away in the league. They were just looking all good. And then it came to the cup tie. Salzburg against Sturm in Salzburg, cup semi-final, the place where Sturm knocked out Salzburg in the quarters last year on home turf. And then Solé puts, Solé, of course, obviously Solé, see the Christian Ilzer reaction of like, of course it had to be him. Solé puts Salzburg 1-0 up in the cup, and you're thinking, here we go, the guy who everybody thinks should be banned, or everybody on the Sturm Graz side thinks should be banned for this game, has of course scored 1-0 for Salzburg.
It was really poor defending as well, because I think it was so tight in that first league game. I was really surprised at how many sort of basic positioning errors and poor marking seemed to take place in this game. So Solé was basically allowed by Alexander Prass to just completely drift away. And then he had the easiest finish, really. But yeah, controversial that it was him.
It's always tough when that's a good tactic, isn't it? When you take a corner and you win the run into the near post and the flick on makes defending tough, doesn't it? When you've won the flick on there, there's often somebody there waiting in a great position. But credit to Sturm. We said that they'd want to bounce back, and they, you know, they fell a bit flat maybe in the league game. They were determined not to do the same in Salzburg in the cup, and they sure didn't, because they came roaring back into the game and turned it around.
Yeah, I have to give a massive shout out to Otar Kitiashvili's pass for the equaliser, which was a total defence splitter. Went through to Horvat, who then squared it across to, who was it that scored that?
Boving scored the first one.
Boving, that's it. But what a lovely pass that was, to just right into that channel, into the path of Horvat for that. That was just sensational. It reminded me, it's maybe slight hyperbole, but it reminded me of a kind of Cantona-style pass. He just had the vision, and it almost seemed like he wasn't looking at where he played the ball to.
No, my hyperbole monitor has not been activated by that, Lee. That, I think that's a fair assessment of what a wonderful pass it was down the right to lead to the opening goal. Salzburg felt that there was a foul in the build-up. Nothing given, though. Back on level terms. And then Sturm turned it around. Horvat made it 2-1 with a shot from inside the box. Some nice passing moves from Sturm to get into the offensive third. That was a theme time and time again in this cup game. But the shot, ultimately, from Horvat, it took a tiny deflection as it went towards Alex Schlager, the goalkeeper, who has been excellent this season. But it wasn't his finest moment in a Salzburg shirt, was it? The shot looked pretty tame. And Schlager just couldn't stop it creeping in inside the post.
Yeah, I mean, we had two of these goals to very different degrees. So the third goal also he did get a touch to. But I would definitely say that the second Sturm Graz goal was a clear goalkeeping error. And I think he pretty much acknowledged that in his post-game interview. But it's kind of uncharacteristic for Alex Schlager to make what I would call a genuine clanger.
Yeah, okay, you'd call it a genuine clanger. I think, I mean, it looked bad, didn't it? I think it does take a tiny deflection, and he's already gone down for the dive, and then the ball just doesn't quite meet him where he was expecting it. And of course, as a top keeper like Schlager, you should be able to respond to that in that millisecond, but he wasn't able to do it. You're right, the Schnegg one as well, another nice passing move. Sturm then got the ball out to the left where Schnegg had tons of space on the edge of the box, took a touch, set himself up, and just hammered it low and hard. It wasn't the best shot in the world. It wasn't a perfect finish by any means, but he had his time to just batter it low towards the goal. As you say, again, Schlager got the touch, and again, it crept in at that far post. What I thought at that time was, blimey, nobody goes two up in these games, do they? You remember the last time? I mean, maybe it wasn't that long ago, but I can't, in my mind, remember in any of these games the last time that Salzburg or Sturm went two up against the other team. There's never clear breathing space in these games.
Yeah, and I think at that point I really did feel that Salzburg would come back into it a bit, just because I think in elite football like this, if you just drop off a couple of percent, the other team will have the upper hand. And I think you do probably do that once you've got a two-goal lead in a game that you're not expecting to win at the ground of your biggest rival. You probably do slightly ease off, and as it was, Salzburg, you know, did come back into the game.
Yeah, they did. I sort of felt it as well. It was like 3-1. I was like, I bet Salzburg are going to get to three before 90 minutes. And ultimately, what happened was Sučić then fired in at the near post. Again, it wasn't a classic for goalkeepers or defenders this game, was it? Sučić fired in at the near post. I thought the keeper, Jaroš, was beaten a little bit easily at his near post. Didn't really...
He looked annoyed with himself, didn't he?
Yeah, it just sort of flashed straight across. You back him to make the save from there. And I think it's an interesting side note that it seems like Kjell Sherpa, who's injured at the moment, is being extended for a lengthier loan spell when he's back from a long-term injury, which you don't see that very often, do you? An ACL injury, long time out, but the club want to renew and keep him on loan. It does seem like Kjell Sherpa is probably a little bit of an upgrade on Jaroš. That was just one of those moments that made me think that. He's a good keeper and he's done well, Jaroš, don't get me wrong. But again, not his finest moment either. Luckily for Sturm, Geierhofer was left absolutely free. And there was no flick on at the front post either. This was one of the worst bits of defending I've ever seen from Salzburg. Geierhofer, about 4 yards out from a corner, just a minute after Salzburg have got back into the game at 3-2. And he simply couldn't miss. Geierhofer, not a man who scores goals, but he couldn't miss from there. Right onto his head, the corner, 3 yards out, easy.
I think that would be hugely frustrating for Gerhard Struber as well. You know, just when your team has that chance to actually have a route back into the game, and then to allow that to happen. You know, as it was, Terzic did get a goal to make it close again in the 90th minute, but Sturm held on, and I think they were the better team in this game. And what I really liked about them is, even though for both teams to a certain extent defending went out of the window, I really felt that Sturm were like really direct with their attacking play. They were just like really incisive, especially with the, I think, was it the Schnegg goal where the ball was played across to the left really quickly. I just was impressed with the way they really took the game to Salzburg. There's no like sort of, these guys have won the league 10 years in a row, we need to be more respectful. It's, we're going to give it as good a go as we can and see what we can do. And 2 years knocking them out of the cup in Salzburg is not a coincidence.
It's not, and I think you're totally right to pick that out, because I think this is literally, it epitomised everything that Sturm were missing from the home game in the league, and they thought, we've missed a great chance there to get a foothold in the title race. Not even a foothold, they arguably would have, you know, put themselves in pole position had they won or performed like that in the league a few days before, and they were like, we've got a chance to do this again, we've got a replay, we've got a do-over, and this time there's potentially a trophy on the line as well. We better get it right this time, or we better not be afraid this time. And they certainly weren't. They really went for it. And they ended up winning 4-3. So Sturm into the cup final once again, yeah.
Can I just throw a little bit of a fact about the scoreline in there as well? Because I had to look for a long time to find out the last time Salzburg conceded 4 goals at home in a competitive match to an Austrian opponent.
Okay.
Any guesses when and who?
So I think in the friendlies, they conceded 4 to, if I'm not mistaken, once each of the last 2 summers. Didn't they concede 4 to Inter, and then yeah, 4 to like Al Ittihad or something in a friendly, and in the Champions League I think they regularly conceded 4, but not at home probably,
and in the, to an Austrian opponent.
Okay,
as well.
So to an Austrian opponent, it's either somebody like a Viadse or an Altac who've just like popped up with a crazy result. Is it Altac?
It is Altac.
Is it really
stunning? Yeah.
Oh yes.
It was, but it was Altach back on the last day of the 2008-09 season.
In Salzburg, is this?
In Salzburg.
Okay, unbelievable. Wow.
But Salzburg had already won the league that day, so I don't know if that factors
And did they win 5-4?
They did not, no.
Okay,
they
so
lost 4-1.
All right, so nobody... Yeah, I thought it's been a long time since anybody scored four. That's like hang it in a museum kind of stuff. Mm. But seriously impressive for Sturm Graz. I think the difference here is you only had to see the reaction. Like you say, when Geierhofer's header went in and you said it would be frustrating for Struber, the defenders, they looked absolutely... They looked so annoyed with themselves. Everyone was giving that like full, the real like high energy annoyance motion kind of. You know what I mean? Everyone like down on the knees, like grabbing their hair and everything. It was a bad moment. But this underlines the difference in Austrian football. If Sturm can win one of the two titles available domestically this season, it is a massive success for them fundamentally. If Salzburg win one of the two titles this season, it's quite a big failure for them in many ways,
especially having missed out on the cup last season.
Absolutely. So it does show the difference between the two teams, and I think for Sturm it does them no harm in the title running either. I know they haven't won the cup yet, of course, they've still got a final to come, but they'll back themselves in that final and they'll know that they've got a shot at cup glory, and it's like pressure off in the league. It's like we can go and hopefully win the cup, and then anything that happens in the league now, total bonus. And they've backed it up now by taking a narrow win against LASK this weekend, and Salzburg at home have not bounced back. They drew, thanks to a late Marco Gruhl penalty, with Rapid in a pretty decent Rapid performance. So Salzburg, after opening up that 5-point lead, that's been reduced back to 3. Suddenly, potentially it's game on again in the title race.
Yeah, you'd have to say so. I mean, considering that Sturm and Salzburg will play again, I think that game is in Salzburg, isn't it? On Sunday, the 28th of April.
Apparently, it doesn't matter whether it's in Salzburg or in Graz.
Yeah.
Sturm are just as good if they turn up.
That's true. Yeah. So I suppose if it's still 3 points by the time they go head to head again, you never know.
You never know. Similar to last year, I was there when Salzburg turned around from behind, I think, and won that game last year. But yeah, it's close. It's edge of the seat stuff. Sturm are through to the cup final, where they will meet Rapid Vienna. We were there at the less classic cup semi-final. Leoben 0, Rapid 3. You mentioned earlier the Monte Schlacko Arena, which is beautifully overlooked by snowy mountains. I loved our trip out to Leoben. It was great. But in terms of viewing the game, perhaps wasn't the greatest experience.
No, shall I run through the different views we had? So
Please.
We were there as accredited journalists, and there was just simply not enough space because of the demand. Tiny press area. So we watched the first 10 minutes from the VIP room, which might sound quite grandiose, but in fact, there were windows facing different parts of the pitch with walls in between them. So if you wanted to see one penalty area, you looked out the left window. If you want to see the middle of the pitch, you had to move across a bit, look out the middle window, and then the same for the right window. Then we moved outside, sat next to the fans for a little bit. You with your laptop right in the match report right next to the fans. And then for the second half, we moved round to the actual press area, stood right at the back. I thought we had finally secured ourselves a view, only for ORF presenter Rainer Parasek and Helga Payer to stand right in front of us and completely block our view. So we had very limited viewing throughout the game.
Yeah, I've got a bone to pick there with Rainer Parasek and with Helga Payer, because they're about the only two people in the whole of this stadium in Leoben who we couldn't really tap on the shoulder and be like, guys, would you mind moving out of the way?
Yeah.
Like, you could say that to almost anybody, but not really to them. It's like footballing royalty in a sense. You know, the main ORF TV presenter, the main, you know, former goalkeeper, former professional there to do the TV work. And they had seats. That's the annoying thing. They had seats. They could have sat down. Yeah, they could have sat down and watched the game. Instead, they stood right in front of us and made life a little bit difficult for us to see. But I will say, I don't think I've ever really watched a game from behind glass before, like we did in the first half. Mm. And I don't like it at all. That's
no.
If you ever get a VIP box or whatever and you watch the game behind glass, just absolute nonsense. Didn't like that at all.
Yeah, somehow it just takes away. I don't know if it's the sound, because it lessens the sound, or if it's just the general feeling, but... Yeah, I wasn't a great fan, to be honest.
Not something I'm keen to repeat. Mm. On the field, you had Kevin Friesenbichler, ex-Austria Vienna Kevin Friesenbichler. He blazed over from about 7 yards out, a really good chance early on at 0-0. And arguably that was Leoben's best chance to sort of get that cup set atmosphere flowing around the stadium, because it very much felt like a good cup tie, you know, totally packed, people absolutely everywhere, every inch of the ground crammed with people trying to watch the game. Maybe the biggest game in Leoben's history, certainly their recent history, I'm not really sure. But if they'd have got 1-0 up, if they'd have gone 1-0 up there, you could certainly see that making the atmosphere really difficult for Rapid.
Well, we do know it wasn't the biggest game in their history, because the last time Rapid won the Cup, 1995, against Leoben in the final. But probably very close to it, wasn't it? Like, getting to a semi-final and being the only team that's not a big heavyweight in Austrian football to be there was a big thing.
Yeah, maybe their biggest home game then.
yeah, you could say that.
But it went against them, didn't it, then? After missing that chance, it all sort of fell Rapid's way.
Yeah, I mean, Rapid didn't really look in danger once Burgstaller had put them ahead. This was arguably, like, this went down on some live scores apps as an own goal, and in some cases a Burgstaller goal, but I really liked the reverse pass through from Marco Gruhl into the pass of Seidel there. That was a nicely taken goal. And then it was 2-0 in the 41st minute. This was pretty poor defending from Mattia Horvath. He sort of just dilly-dallied on the ball and had it stolen off his toe by Christoph Lang. And I think at half-time, I never really felt, oh, there's a chance they'll come back into this in the second half.
No, 2-0, Rapid holding them at arm's length, really. Yeah, like you say, I'm loving this combination at the moment between Gruhl, Seidel and Lang. Looking really good in that front three, the attacking midfield three, I should say, for Rapid. I love their combination play. Great passing, great vision. Gruhl absolutely coming into his own, finally fulfilling his potential. He's got finishing in him, he's got assists in him, he's got great passing, and now he's leaving on a free.
Yeah, just a shame. I was about to say that. He's going to Bremen, yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, it's hard to criticise Rapid too much on this, because I like the looks of some of the other players coming through, like Isaac Jansson and stuff, and they sold Nicholas Kuhn for decent money. You can't be perfect, you know. Well, you can be perfect. Obviously, you want to be perfect, but it's like, Gruhl is kind of the one thing where you think, they chose to let him go on a free and keep him for the rest of the year. If they end up finishing higher up the league table or winning the cup with Gruhl scoring in the cup final or something, then it will absolutely have been the right decision. But ultimately, you just can't help feeling bad, because he's probably raised his transfer value now to like four or five million or maybe a little bit higher. And of course, it's like he's just fulfilling his potential the most he's ever done in a Rapid shirt right now, and he's leaving.
Ah. I don't think I've ever really rated him hugely highly until now, just because of, like, I really felt that end product was missing from a player that kind of seemed like he had everything else. Was the biggest sort of attacking threat until it came to, like, the really decisive areas. And so, yeah, it's going to be a huge shame for them. No two ways about it. But we see this a lot in Austria. We see Austria Vienna often lose players on a free as well, because they have not been in the financial position to give them a longer contract. It's a sad reality of the Austrian game, really.
Unfortunately, that is what it is. But Rapid were leading 2-0 at the break. DSV Leoben tried to come back in the second half. As you said, it never really looked likely. The biggest and best chance was certainly from the Leoben captain, Nico Pichler, who fired a really nice shot that beat Hedl's dive and came back off the upright. And once it hit the woodwork and bounced away, you felt like it's not really going to be their day. I would have loved to see the last 10 or 15 minutes of that game if it had gone back to 2-1. Fact is, it didn't. Fele Maulu came on and made it 3-0 from a tight angle.
I have to admit, I had my own Chris Kamara moment in the stadium. Because I'd moved seating. I'd moved around to the stairs and somehow completely managed to miss the third goal going in. So I had my own, you know, is it 3-0, Jeff? But yeah, so I totally missed that. But I did see it back on the highlights. It was a very nice finish.
Yes, it was. So that was that. Leoben dumped out of the cup, but in the semi-finals, that's very harsh to say dumped out of the cup. Rapid through to the final, a repeat of last season's final, Rapid against Sturm. Ultimately, do you think Rapid, who actually booked their place in the final first and then had to wait and watch Salzburg against Sturm, do you think they would have been looking forward to playing Sturm again in a rematch more than playing Salzburg, maybe?
I don't know if there's more expectation on them to avenge the defeat by Sturm last year, because they are, you know, Salzburg are the team they just haven't beat in how long now? 15, 16, 17 games. So maybe, but it's good from a neutral perspective, I think, because usually when Salzburg go down to Klagenfurt, they don't fill out the stadium. And the great thing about last year's cup final was that it was just a crackling, sizzling, pyrotechnic field. Well, I'm not saying that's great, but the crackling and sizzling part.
The full part.
Yeah, the full part. And it was just really great in that sense. So to see these two such well-supported clubs go to Klagenfurt and for another year without Salzburg winning a trophy, which was the first time we'd seen that in our time covering Austrian football last season. That was the first time anyone other than Salzburg had won league or cup. So the fact that we're seeing that again, it's going to be good, I think, for the game.
Absolutely, I agree. And looking back to that Salzburg semi-final, it was about, I think, about 11,000 fans there. So way off from a sellout. Sturm sold out their away end. Very, very loud away end tucked away in the corner. I'm just glad for them in a way as well. You know, when you've got an away end that's completely full of really hardcore, passionate fans, and nothing against the Salzburg fans who did turn up. 11,000, you know, 8,000-9,000 of them, fine. But the ones who didn't turn up, you know, the ones who turned up for the Champions League but didn't turn up for the Cup semi-final against Sturm, you know, it's good for Sturm to win that with a packed away end. I like to see that. But turning to DSV Leoben, you'd think a Cup semi-final run and a good spot in the second division, they're right near the top of the table at the moment, you'd think that would be satisfying for a club like Leoben. But no, as the case may be, it's not. Coach René Poms left the club quite shortly after the game, just in the days after the game. And the story behind him leaving is quite bizarre, really. So if you don't mind, yeah, I'll go into that story.
Yeah, I mean, you teased this before the pod, but said you were going to save it for the pod. So I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, so he's spoken about it in the days since. We both raised an eyebrow. You see, like, after the game, we just saw the headline initially saying DSV Leoben and trainer, Poms part ways. And we thought, huh, that's funny. You know, Cup semi-final defeat to Rapid. Yeah, it's 3-0, but second division team at home to a Bundesliga, you know, heavyweight in the form of Rapid. There's certainly no shame in that. They've done amazingly to reach the Cup semi-final. No less beaten three Bundesliga teams along the way.
Yeah, stunning stuff.
Rapid haven't beaten any Bundesliga teams yet in this year's Cup. Not their fault. Won't hold it against them. But still, quite funny.
Have they not?
No, I don't think they have.
Oh, okay. I haven't got the run in front of me. But
low league opposition. They came through against Union Gürten, I remember one of the games. Yeah. I think St. Pölten in the quarterfinals. Yeah. So a Bundesliga-less run to the final. But for Leoben, you had René Poms, hometown manager, which is really nice. You know, it was his dream. He began his playing career, if I'm not mistaken, at Leoben. Had a decent, solid playing career. Has had a solid managerial career as well. Most notably, perhaps, as the assistant coach to Nenad Bjelica at a lot of his major stations. He's come back to his hometown club. It should have been a dream move to come back to Donowitz to manage Leoben. But he said, since then, he's spoken in a few interviews. There's some really nice, interesting articles that tell you more about this on the likes of Laula Eins and Kronen Zeitung. But he said he was disillusioned from the early days. He talks about bullying within the club. He said he had his car scratched and his car keyed and stuff, which is all very bizarre. Obviously, we only hear one side of it, really, but the stories went on closer to this Cup semi-final. He talked about there was a half-time text message in the Cup semi-final, no less, basically saying, look, Rapid are winning 2-0. You've thrown away our two titles this season. You've thrown away the league and you've thrown away the Cup. What a bizarre thing to get from a member of the board at half-time on your phone. It's like, that's not normal behaviour, is it? It's like, if you've had a few too many beers, maybe, I'm not saying anybody has, I don't know who the people are involved, but if you've had a few beers too many, but you happen to have the coach's number, you know, that doesn't seem right to get that at half time.
Not at all.
You know, throwing away the two titles. And also, he talks about a board member as well coming into the club dressing room on occasions, especially one that seemed to rub him the wrong way, which was after, I think, it was after a lengthy unbeaten run for Leoben. They'd gone on a lengthy unbeaten run, then they lost a game. And after that particular loss, somebody from the board came into the dressing room and sort of accused some of the players of like working against the team. And René Poms, the manager, that like obviously sided with the players and defended his players from this. But what strange behaviour. And it's basically come out that they've said, look, anyone sort of who knew behind the scenes isn't surprised. It seems surprising that he's left. If you knew the situation behind the scenes, it's not surprising. And the ambition apparently at Leoben, the sternly held ambition for this season was the minimum requirement was to win the Zweite Liga and to win the Cup. What are they on about? That's just bizarre. That's just completely unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be very disillusioned to believe that that could be a minimum requirement. To me, that sounds like an absolute unbelievable best case scenario.
Yeah, and they've got this thing called Mission 2028, which sounds a lot more realistic, which is we want to achieve promotion to the Bundesliga in 2028. Fair enough. That's, you know, the kind of thing, whether they do it or not is another thing. But a lot of clubs have something along those lines. But to say they've got to win the league this year, which, like, look at the reality. GAK, 14 points clear right now, absolutely running away with the league title. So nobody else was going to win the league this year anyway. you know, and funnily enough, DSV Leoben are in second or joint second, so it's not exactly like they're miles away in table position. And then, you know, the Cup semi-final's a brilliant achievement. So say that he's thrown away two titles by not beating Rapid here. And, you know, he said he's very close to the players. He was very sad to leave. He didn't want to leave. He was very emotional. And he's also said he's ready for legal action if the club take legal action against him, because it seems like they sort of forced the dissolution of the contracts after this game. But, yeah, it just seems very, very weird. And other staff have now left. The whole sort of trainer team has left. And the club have said, René Poms has planned this. He's, like, tapped them all up to make them leave as well. He said he hasn't done that and said that it's just, you know, he's not surprised that they want to leave either, because if the board's handling of things behind the scenes was normal, nobody would have left, himself included. But the club has also been in the news in the last weeks and months for allegations of money laundering, which are very weird indeed. We saw a lot of gold stuff in Leoben, didn't we? There's a lot of, like, sell your gold. There's a lot of all this, like, gold stuff. And the lanyards we got were to do with a gold company as well. I swiftly switched mine over for the official Earthby Cup lanyard, I'll have you know. But all this sort of stuff. And the club have been alleged to have been involved in a pyramid scheme involving gold investment, which doesn't actually involve gold. It's like a gold investment scheme that involves, like, not actually gold, but, like, paper and computer values instead of gold. So I don't know any details about that, and the club strenuously deny, of course, being involved in any of these things. But either way, when you read the stories in the news, you're just thinking, like, huh, something's a little bit strange going on here. Karsten Janke is now back in charge anyway. The club, he was the manager before. They've only recently been promoted from the third division. And he was the manager before. He's come back. And they got a very creditable 1-1 draw with Gierkar at the weekend, as if nothing had happened. But, yeah, Gierkar absolutely on course for the Bundesliga. 14 points clear. Leoben, 38 points, 14 points back. So, you know, joint top of a chasing pack that are nowhere near Gierkar. But it just seemed like a very strange way to end what should have been a really successful and really celebrated week for Leoben.
Yeah, massively, especially the gold thing. That's very bizarre.
Yeah, you can read more about that in the Austrian newspapers if you can, you know, hit Google Translate, or if you understand German, you can just read them straight up, because there's a lot of things which are a bit heavy going even for us with these sort of allegations of certain things and cryptocurrency, this, that, and the other, which said to sort of be a bit dodgy by certain people. And of course, the club have said that we're not part of that, but what is actually going on, we'll find out in due course, I guess. But to turn back to Rapid briefly. Robert Klaus, I think one defeat now in 13 games. They lost to Salzburg under his watch in December, 1-0. Since then, no other defeats at all. Looking basically pretty solid and maybe in a much better position to face a cup final than they were 12 months ago. You know, they just got a confidence-boosting draw in Salzburg as well, 1-1 draw that does them no harm at all. I think they're looking pretty good, and maybe we'll be a different proposition in this year's cup final.
Yeah, I mean, my main gripe with Rapid has always been the inconsistency. It seems that they've finally found a little bit of consistency. And the cup final is taking place only around 3 weeks from now. So if they can keep this up and go into it in good form, we could have two teams that are going head-to-head in that final that are both well-supported and also in fantastic form going into it.
Yeah, what do you think about this? You said it's in about 3 weeks, the cup final. There are three meetings between Rapid and Sturm. That is the third of the three. Two league meetings to come between now and then. Obviously important for both teams in their relative league ambitions. Obviously Sturm pretty much need the 6 points if they're going to win the Bundesliga. Rapid would take, you know, probably take 3 points or certainly four. There'll be crucial points in the race for European places. But I'm a bit worried that three meetings in the course of 3 weeks might make the cup final a bit of a dirge, because the teams know each other so well.
Yeah, I suppose you do run that risk around this time of the Austrian Bundesliga season with the split and the championship round and the best teams being in there and probably in the cup final. And there's also this weird bit of the championship round where I think was it match day 27 and 28 where it's the same two teams playing against each other. And it's just, I suppose, an unlucky coincidence of planning that it's fallen around the cup final. But I think the cup final will just be a game on its own, won't it, really? Like, this is the chance to win a trophy. I think both teams would immediately rather win that third one if it meant losing the other two. So I think we'll see a good one.
I think that's a fair assessment. You take the cup win, wouldn't you, over the league points. Even Sturm probably, I think they'll see it as a success if they don't manage to win the league but win the cup. For the rest of the top six, there's not really that much to talk about, to be honest. We've had three rounds of matches now. The league seems to have broken into a little group. You've got Salzburg up at the top, Sturm chasing them as hard as they can, and then you've got like Lask and Rapid in their own little third, fourth, and then you've got Hartberg and Klagenfurt in the fifth, sixth battle. That was encapsulated today by Klagenfurt getting a 99th minute equaliser against Hartberg. So Hartberg weren't able to pull away any ground there. They stay locked together on points. They're not far behind Rapid and Lask. It's fair to be to say, you know, they are very much close to those two teams, actually. But you sort of imagine that Rapid and Lask are going to take third and fourth in some way, don't you?
I think so. It's still miraculous to me. Like, Lask were in a league of their own in third place a little while ago. They were so far clear in third. So the fact that Rapid are actually ahead of them now, albeit on, would it be, head-to-head record and goal difference, is quite surprising.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I said before, I think if the season was a bit longer, the regular season, Lask would have run the risk of actually falling out of the top six. That's how big their drop-off has been. They can't seem to score goals. They just can't seem to get anything together. They don't look exciting when they play. They started, didn't they? It was Lask v Rapid was the opening game of the championship round. It was on a Friday night to kick everything off. And you thought, oh, rub the hands together. Exciting Friday night kickoff. The business end of the season starts now. And then it was a drab 0-0 draw. And the best chance came from Moses Usor, who missed an open goal. To be technical, it was from the halfway line. But still, it sort of summed them up that You'd like to back yourself that, you know, it's not a terrible miss if you miss from the halfway line, even when the goal is open. But he like sliced it well wide and you're like, it's just not really working for them, is it? And that sort of summed up the championship round for Lask a little bit so far. Very, very, everything looks like hard work for them at the moment. And I would argue that Thomas Sagida might be under more pressure than anybody else in the league as a manager right now.
Bring Didi Kubau back, do you reckon?
I said the football wasn't interesting and everything looked like hard work. There's a manager where you can guarantee everything will look like hard work. Yeah, I don't really know what's going on at Lask. It's not fun to watch at the moment. In a way, part of me hopes that, you know, Klagenfurt and Hartberg, they're doing so well to get there and they're trying their best, you know. This is very tough for them now. They're basically playing games where they're the underdogs every week. And now this week they meet each other and they draw 2-2. Of course they do. It's hard for them to sort of push up the table, but part of me wishes that they would. But what a great chance for Rapid to actually finish third this season. And that would be a success for Robert Klaus. You know, cup win or no cup win. If they, you know, reach the cup final, I mean, if they win the cup, Rapid, can you imagine? It would be incredible. Mm. And, you know, third place in the league as well wouldn't be a bad achievement at all this year.
No, I think considering how long it is since Rapid have won the cup, that was 1995, so 29 years ago, and the league was 2008. A first trophy in 15 years would be a huge party in Vienna, or 16 years now. First trophy in 16 years it would be.
It would be massive, and it's not a little overdue. Moving down to the bottom six, I've got almost nothing to say on the bottom six. I don't know if you've been watching too much of the bottom six, Lee, but there have been 9 games since the split. How many of those have ended in draws?
Yes, I saw you did a tweet about this from the other Bundesliga account. If there's been 9 games and you're tweeting about it, I reckon it's got to be 6.
It is 8.
Oh, wow.
8 out of 9. Only one team has won a game in the bottom six. Do you know who that is? Only one team has won a game and only one team, therefore, has lost a game.
Has Lustenau done it?
No, they won just before the split. They won just before the split, but it's actually Lustenau who lost to VSG Tirol. VSG Tirol beat them 2-1 in Bregenz. And that is the only victory, the only non-draw of the whole of the bottom six relegation round, which is quite ridiculous. And my hyperbole alert has definitely been going great guns there, because just look at the social media teams bending over backwards to point out these unbeaten runs. Because guess what? Everybody in the bottom six is unbeaten, except for Lustenau, unfortunately, who've got 2 draws and a defeat. Blau-Weiss Linz, perhaps the best of them all, with 3 consecutive 0-0 draws. it's pretty grim stuff. Like, I don't know what it means. Does it mean they're all rubbish, or does it mean all the? Is it a brilliant display of defensive football from everybody? Is it paucity of attacking quality, or is it just teams cancelling each other out? What's going on?
I mean, it's definitely a big change from the time where I think there was a stat a few seasons back. Goal per game average in the Austrian Bundesliga compared to other European leagues. I think Austria was second, maybe behind Switzerland, with something like an average of 3 goals per game or something like that was quite high. So it definitely goes against that. As to whether it's, you know, solid defending or terrible attacking, I don't think I can say. I haven't watched enough of it to judge.
No, it doesn't make life easy for the fans, does it? You know, you travel a long way maybe for some of these games and you pretty much know at the moment it's going to end level. One or two teams are just going to win one or two games and it's going to be massive because already that one win for VSG has left them now 5 points ahead of Lustenau, where it could have been, they could have gone behind Lustenau had they lost that game. So one goal either way and they're, you know, it changes the picture dramatically in those games.
Talking of VSG Tyrol, have I just imagined it or is Thomas Silberberger stepping down at the end of the season?
He is. He is one of Europe's longest serving managers. He's done a Jurgen Klopp in a kind of small way and announced early that he's going to leave in the hope that it gives his team a little extra Motivationsschub, a little boost of motivation to stave off relegation, because that would be a very sad way for him to end his tenure. Part of me hopes.
It's been 11 years.
Oh, I knew it as soon as it came out of my mouth. I knew what you were going to say. But to be fair, it's quite a good one. A little part of me wants to see VSG get relegated, and that's nothing against VSG, but I just want to see them back in Vattens, playing in their own stadium. I'd love to see VSG pushing for a league title in Liga 2 in Vattens, more than I'd love to see them sort of struggling from game to game, getting about 1,000 fans in a massive stadium in Innsbruck. It's a bit of a shame. But Lustenau, 5 points adrift at the bottom. Blau-Weiss Linz and VSG are now level, 5 points ahead of them. Somebody called this earlier on in the season. I said, Austria Vienna. I think Austria Vienna were like the second best team in the league for a long stretch before the split. And I said, well, surely it'll be a cakewalk then in the bottom six. They'll just cruise to the bottom six title. And somebody pointed out, it doesn't work like that, though. When you're in the bottom six, it doesn't work like that. You can't just keep playing glamour football and winning all these games. And absolutely right, that prescient prediction, they haven't won a game yet. Of course, they've drawn all of them, just as Wolfsburg have.
I think I'll give the credit to Simon for that prescient prediction. I don't think that was me.
I really thought they would do great and go on and sort of wrap up the bottom six and give themselves a shot at a European playoff. But right now, they've remained 1 point ahead of VRC, who've had three chances to move ahead of Austria Vienna, but have not been able to do it. It's just not working out. From there, we'll take a very quick break. We'll wrap up our relegation round draw. I don't want to say drama, because there hasn't been any drama, but we'll round up that mini section and we'll move on to a very quick look at the international scene before we wrap up the pod. So, from a bottom six in the Bundesliga with almost no goals to talk about, to the Austrian national team. We'll finish off today for the pod with the Austrian national team, Ralf Rangnick's boys, on their way to Euro 2024. And the most recent international break was quite a fun one. It was a little while ago now, but it's still worth talking about. We've only had a couple of games in Austria domestically since then. Austria had what didn't look like a particularly exciting run of fixtures, but they managed to make a game away against Slovakia and at home, if you will, against Turkey. They managed to make them pretty exciting because we went out to Slovakia. We did the very quick hop over to Bratislava, one of the quickest hops between European capitals, 55 kilometres, less than an hour. We had a great day in the sunshine, drinking in Bratislava, headed into the away end for the game against Slovakia, where there were almost no home fans and a completely sold out away section. And ultimately, we were still just about coming up the stairs to get in when Austria opened the scoring. And we saw it on our phones. We heard it. We saw it on our phones. We thought, oh, Baumgartner, 1-0, first minute. Nice. Cool. And then it became clear to us when we saw the replays then on our phones that it wasn't just 1-0 in the first minute. It was 1-0 after 6 seconds, the quickest international goal of all time. And we were just outside. How annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I found this goal fascinating in many respects. So it was obviously like very emblematic of Ralf Rangnick's style of play. Go straight for the jugular. I also found it interesting that there was no passing. He just ran with the ball and he caught so many players napping. He ran between two, ran past another, and then the defense backed off. So it was like a perfect storm. But then I also found it interesting. You mentioned, I think, on our sister show, The Sweeper, when you told this story about the fact that they'd actually talked about trying something like this. And for me, I was quite surprised that with the Euros coming up, why would you try something like this? Even though it's unlikely to work, why would you try it in a meaningless friendly when now everybody's going to be super wary of it? I just thought the timing to try it was slightly strange.
I agree. It's cool that they've got the quickest international goal ever. That at least is a nice little piece of history. But you're right. When you've got, if that's your training ground sort of trick up your sleeve, you can't use it again. they've blown it too early before the Euros. But, I mean, at least they did it successfully, because, in fairness, if they tried it and didn't score, they still would have given it away. But maybe, I mean, who's studying the tapes of the first 6 seconds of of a friendly between Slovakia and Austria? I'm not sure. However, now they've studied them, and just funnily enough, on the same night, Germany, the the rivals Germany, scored after, what, 7.5 seconds in a very similar circumstance?
Yeah, Austria just coming out on top in all aspects compared to Germany at the moment. We beat Germany in a friendly in November, and now beating them to the quickest goal of the night and of all time as well. So.
Yeah, and I wanted it to continue into the women's qualifiers. Eileen Campbell, on amazing form, just moved from Altach Vorderland in the women's Bundesliga in Austria to the German Bundesliga. She's doing great, Eileen Campbell. I've picked her out many times as one of the best up-and-coming Austrian women's players. She put Austria 2-0 up in a qualifier recently in Linz against Germany. And unfortunately, Germany turned it back around and won 3-2. So the great run against Germany was brought to a halt there by the women's team, but still a very good effort. You know, the German women's team are certainly a big step above in terms of international rankings and international stature than the Austrian women's team, who nonetheless played very well. But unfortunate to lose from 2-0 up. Moving back to the men's team, the second game after the 2-0 win in Slovakia, which had very little of note to talk about, to be honest, other than the Baumgartner goal after 6 seconds. The next game was a home game at the Ernst Happel Stadion against Turkey, which looked like a fairly tricky proposition, perhaps. You know, Turkey well supported in this part of the world, and, you know, it was going to be a good friendly, hoping for some goals, hoping for some action. Austria just came out and sort of confirmed their status as one of the teams to watch ahead of the Euros, maybe.
You say that, but I thought they were remarkably slow, only scoring after 106 seconds this time. 100 seconds slower than the game against Slovakia.
A full 100 seconds slower. Yeah. Disgraceful.
I thought Austria was so good in this game. The pressing was really, like, clear for all to see. You know, like, for the first two goals in particular, I thought their pressing was absolutely spot on. And that's what Raniuk wants, isn't it? He either wants to win the ball extremely high up the pitch, or win the ball back and then get as high up the pitch as quickly as humanly possible. Because his whole philosophy of football is to try and score. Is it within 10 seconds of winning the ball back? So
kickoff, does that count as winning the ball back? Because they scored within 10 seconds
of
that.
Yeah, they did, yeah. I think it's just very, like, it sums up his idea of playing football. And I think it also lends a lot of credence to our theory that Franco Foda was holding them back, because they've got all of these players that are super used to playing this high tempo transition football in Germany and in Austria, and now they've got somebody that is letting them play it, and boy do they look good. And I think it's fair to say, I know we'll come back and talk more about this Turkey game in a second, but Turkey were branded the dark horses for the last Euro, and in my humble opinion Austria will be the dark horses for this Euro. I think they look so good.
6-1, the final score. Mm. I saw highlights. I didn't see that much of the game, to be honest. So
a rout.
A rout, yeah.
A rout Weghorst.
Rout Weghorst. Would be great if he was either Austrian or Turkish, but I will allow it. Because considering Netherlands are in Austria's group, it's definitely acceptable. 6-1 against Turkey. Who were the standout players? What were the standout goals? You talked nicely about the Rangnick philosophy sort of bearing fruit, and we know how Rangnick wants to play football, and Austria seem to be able to just visibly go and do it, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'd highlight a few people. I mean, Gregoric scoring, you know, two goals from a corner and a penalty as well. Baumgartner getting on the score sheet again. Obviously, it's super easy to praise the goal scorers, but we have to praise the scorer of the sixth goal, Maximilian Entrup of Hartberg, who was playing for Marshfeld in, was it the third division a year ago? And now he's scoring for Austria against Turkey, who are a big football nation. It was all just a great way to sign off and go into the Euros on a high, I think.
It sounds better when you say, you know, semi-professional, basically, and now scoring. What a moment. When I saw that name pop up on the FotMob app, I was like, yes, that's great. You know, wasn't a goal for the ages, but for him it will be.
It's a nice run and a glancing header. Also, you know, another thing that Foda didn't do was give players in the Austrian Bundesliga a chance. And I really like the fact that A, Raniuk is giving players in the Austrian Bundesliga a chance, and B, I really like the fact that after the unsavoury scenes that followed the Vienna derby, he said to Guido Burgstaller, Niklas Hedl and Marco Grull, who were involved in homophobic chanting after that game, you've got to take some time to think about what you're doing, because I don't want that to be part of my Austria squad. And I really like that, because there is also a bit of pressure on the manager that if results don't go your way, then people are saying, well, you know, you took a big risk by pulling them out, but he took that risk. I think it was the right decision, and then Austria just shone anyway. So I'm full of Rangnick love right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was strong management, wasn't it? It was clear, decisive, and strong management. Rangnick seems good for that kind of thing. And I mean, who could live without 9 minutes of Guido Burgstaller, who then would get sent off? But yeah, point taken, though. It was strong management, and I think it just adds to the sense that it's a cohesive unit. And it's like saying to those players, like, do you want to get your act together, be a role model, be part of the unit, sort of stand for the values that we stand for? Do you want to do that and be part of this team and come to the Euros maybe? Or are you willing to, like, you know, act differently and not be part of it? So, yeah, I did like that. Looking forward to the Euros, we now know the fourth team in the group: Austria, France, Netherlands, and playoff winner,
Poland.
Yes, Poland. Got past Wales, didn't they? What are your overriding feelings and emotions about drawing Poland instead of Wales?
For me, Poland at major tournaments are like a sandwich without a filling. They're just, like, they just don't offer anything. They're very bland. And, yeah, I mean, I always, coming away from the sandwich analogy now, but I always expect something from Poland.
No, continue with the sandwich analogy. The Lewandowski crust.
But with players like Lewandowski, sandwich. You would hope. And I know it's a lot to pin all your hopes on one player, but somehow I always expect Poland are going to do something in a major tournament. And they rarely do. I feel like, yeah, they're a bit bland, really.
They've been good in qualifiers, haven't they? And then not so much in group stages.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this before, but I think Austria probably will be quite willing to face France and the Netherlands because they like to hit fast. And if you've got a team that's attacking you, that's the best thing to have when you want to attack somebody, for them to be out of position. And I think that Rangnick's tactics are perfectly set up for that. The Poland game could be a bit more interesting because Austria will probably be expected to play a bit more on the front foot and take the game to Poland. But especially with this current Euro format where the third place team can go through, I do actually expect Austria to go through more than I expect them not to. And I think, depending on the draw, we could see them get to the quarterfinals or maybe even the semifinals. And ooh, I know it's big words because a lot of that depends on the draw, but I really don't think they should fear anyone right now.
But you've said Poland don't turn up in major tournaments very often. Facts back that up. Does that mean now they're destined to turn up against Austria and you know, they'll just roll over Austria in the Euros? The issue for Austria is, naturally, that game against Poland, whoever it would have been interesting to see them play Wales as well. They met them in the World Cup qualifier recently, the playoff, and lost. I'd argue Austria are much better now than they were then. Wales, not quite the same side that they were then. It could easily have been Wales as well, though, couldn't it? Because that game against Poland was goalless, it was tense, it was nervous. I don't think Poland had a single shot on target in the match, and they ended up winning it on penalties. So maybe that plays into Austria's hands a bit, that Poland very much scraped through. But they've got a shot to nothing. They've got nothing to lose. And there's a natural tendency to suggest that this Austria-Poland game, given the fact that France and Netherlands are the other two teams, is kind of the big one. Am I right to say that? Or is that perhaps an unfair analysis?
I think so. I think it's probably good that the France game is first. Because if you lose to France, I think most teams, or maybe all teams in that group, will lose to France. And then you've got Poland as that crucial one, that second one. And if they lose that, then they're in big trouble. But that's a great opportunity to put themselves in with a good chance going into that final game against the Netherlands in the final group games. And before that, they've got games against Serbia. That's in Austria. That could potentially be, you know, a home game for both teams, given the Serbian population here. And then away to Switzerland in two pre-Euro friendlies. So I wonder if they've chosen that opposition because they have a similar playing style or if it's totally random.
Well, they've done the standard Euro thing, haven't they? They've seen that Austria are in the group, so they've organised a friendly against Switzerland, because that's what you do. If Austria are in your group, you play a friendly against Switzerland. If Switzerland are in your group, then you'll play a friendly against Austria. What they haven't realised is that they are Austria and it doesn't work.
I was going to say, there's a crucial part wrong with this this analogy. But yeah, Serbia on the 4th of June, Switzerland on the 8th of June, and then the Euros in Germany start 9 days later against France, 9 o'clock on the evening of the 17th of June. It's going to be a big one.
Can't wait. I think you're right. You know, the Euros last time, North Macedonia was the first game. So all the pressure was on that, wasn't it? It was like they had to beat North Macedonia. Anything other than that, massive failure. And they hadn't won a tournament game for like decades. So they've got that off their back in the last Euros. They beat North Macedonia, they beat Ukraine. They did really well in the knockouts against Italy. Fell flat against the Netherlands. They've got that to look back on and say, let's not do that again. Just can't wait. Can't wait for the Euros. Austria seemingly in good shape ahead of that. Roll on the summer.
Yeah, I'm on board the Ranić train. I can't wait to see where it stops.
Before the Euros, we will, of course, be back with all the action from the Bundesliga. There is still more to come, of course. The title race looking interesting. 3 points between Salzburg and Sturm at the moment. A cup final to come as well between Rapid and Sturm soon. So we're not checking out yet for this season, are we?
No, we're not. And if I may, just to give a quick shout out to our sister show, The Sweeper. We have actually talked quite a bit about Austria recently, the fastest international goal of all time. You gave a live report on that. And then we talked a little bit about the reflecting on the sinkhole story and the power cut, which was at the game against Denmark, sort of towards the beginning of Ranić's reign, and then how Austria have developed under Ranić. So definitely an Austrian perspective on that as well. You can find The Sweeper on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, The Sweeper is absolutely worth listening to. And Lee, you're doing a very sweeperish thing right now by wearing a Mongolia football shirt, which I fully approve of. That couldn't be a more sweeper choice of clothing for this recording.
Yeah, just very in brief, the story behind this is that there is currently a Mongolian professional footballer cycling from Mongolia to the UK. It's taken him a year. He's finally got to the UK. He's in London now with a dream of seeing Manchester United play when he came to Vienna. I hosted him, took him to a Rapid Vienna game. It was his first ever football match outside of Mongolia. He loved it at the Allianz Stadion. And as he left, as a parting gift, he gave me this Mongolia jersey. So I now wear it with pride.
Oh, he was a lovely guy. Yeah, we had some drinks together and he was a great guy. I didn't get to go to Rapid with you guys, but yeah, good on Ochiru. What's on the next sweeper coming up? What are your headline stories?
We are going to be talking a little bit about domestic cups in South America. So we're going to be talking about...
As you do.
Yeah, of course. Where else would you start? There's a team in Chile from the Juan Fernandez Islands, which are 600 kilometres off the coast of Chile. They've been invited as a special guest in the opening round of the Chilean Cup. And we're also going to be talking about a team in war-torn Sudan that are going to be participating in the Tanzanian League next season. So a couple of quirky and interesting stories.
Nice. I'd like to see Juan Fernandez against Diego Garcia. Sounds like a French Open tennis match. Is actually islands.
Yeah, actually, it's not the first time that a Chilean island team has taken part in the cup, because they did it on Easter Island in 2009. So you had all the Maui statues in the background as the game took place. So they're kind of keeping up with that tradition.
That's incredible.
So listen to The Sweeper, everyone.
All right, yeah, why not? Sounds like a good idea. And if you want to contribute to the Other Bundesliga, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Other Bundesliga and you can buy us a beer if you want. That is extremely generous. Everybody who's done that, we are very, very grateful for you. Thank you very much for funding our beers as we go around the country and around Vienna to record the pod and to watch the games that allow us to record the pod in the first place. Thanks a lot for joining us for this one. Do find The Sweeper and do find us next time we're back. We'll be back on Other Bundesliga in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll have some more Bundesliga drama to bring you by then. Goodbye.
Bis bald.